I think there's circa $2,000 trillion at the moment across everything. And Bitcoin has the ability to be bigger than that whole. And Bitcoin is going to make up at least half of that pie.
How much Bitcoin do you think you need to retire now?
I'd put in 100%. And Bitcoin's a lot like being rich or fit. You can never be too rich. You can never be too fit. We've got circa 20 years or more before we reach retirement.
Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, recurring guest, Peter Dunworth. But Peter, everything is crashing and burning right now, but you did mention to me pre-show that you think that this is lining up for something sweet and juicy towards the end of the year. So what are we looking at, Peter? Are we going to see Bitcoin rip and roar towards the end of the year and potentially see that $1 million Bitcoin?
Goodness knows. That's a great setup, Brandon. It's great to be with you, and it's always fun. But you know what? It's peak pessimism out there at the moment, and everyone is fearful. And I look around, and there's been nothing but great news when it comes to Bitcoin. And I look at the fundamentals of Bitcoin haven't changed. The fact that there's global adoption, government adoption, nothing but good news out, and there are real headwinds that are basically exogenous shocks to the Bitcoin network, or not the network, but the actual pricing of Bitcoin. And I look at that and think, all things considered, Bitcoin's in a really great place. It's better than it's ever been. The hash rate is more than it ever has been. So the actual security of the network is better than it's been. And we now have Main Street getting familiar with Bitcoin, all in the midst of a trade war slash tariff, tariff warfare that we're seeing go on at the moment, which is causing headwinds in price. But that's really a temporary thing. And a lot of that's going to be cleared up relatively quickly, I think, because no one really wants a long-term trade war or these tariffs to persist. And then once we clear that sort of economic overhang, then it's really blue sky for Bitcoin to start ripping. And that's where we get into the accumulation phase for larger entities, institutions. And I think the size or market cap of Bitcoin can grow dramatically to start accommodating those larger players, because those larger players aren't really wanting to get into Bitcoin until they can see the exit door isn't going to close on them when they try to get out. So a $2 trillion market cap isn't really big enough for them to get interested. But as the size and market cap of Bitcoin gets bigger, we're actually going to see bigger players enter, because they can allocate much deeper pools of capital to it, because they know that they can get out without getting hurt.
Then where is that exit velocity, do you think? Like, what market cap, do we need to double? Do we need to triple? Do we need a 10X before we see these bigger entities? Or will some of these bigger entities maybe be a little riskier and get in now and shoot that market cap up to that case? Like, how do you see this playing out?
It's funny, this is a game theory that we all talk about and have speculated for such a long time on. And I dare say, Bitcoiners who are watching this understand that they've played this game with themselves, that they look at this and they think, oh, let's try a little bit, and then they add further capital to it, and then they think, oh, two regrets that most Bitcoiners have is I didn't buy enough and I didn't buy early enough. So the capital weighting that you put in initially was too low and you didn't put it in early enough. Prime example for me was I was told at $3 that I should buy some Bitcoin and was too smart to do that, so it ended up costing me a fortune, what was financially my most costly mistake. But it was a great lesson that, hey, all of a sudden, on a risk-adjusted basis, where we are right now, I think is the best time to be buying Bitcoin, because the left hand of the bell curve, or the Bitcoin going to zero event, has now been taken off the table. Bitcoin is integrating itself into the financialization of the world, or Bitcoinization of the world, as I think Pierre Richard likes to talk about. And it's like a reverse takeover. And slowly but surely, Bitcoin is going to be integrated into our financial system. And therein lies the opportunity. So I think the game theory is, for those who are brave to be early to this trade, they're going to benefit in an outsized way, because as more and more capital comes to this space, there's going to be less and less Bitcoin available to it. So what my expectation is, that last bit of capital to the market is actually going to multiply the price of Bitcoin dramatically more than the early players. So the longer you're in, the better uptick you're going to get.
Then with that, all right, I'm gonna get a price prediction out of you, Peter. I'm gonna pull one out. Like, how much money are we talking about? Because, I mean, we see traditional finance coming out of here, right? I mean, we've seen the ETFs now a year and a few months in, and at least in the United States, there's obviously been products, you know, globally, but we've never seen nation states. And, you know, of course, we've got El Salvador, one Kingdom of Bhutan, like smaller nation states, but the United States coming in is astronomical. And the amount that they're talking about is buying 1 million Bitcoin total for over 5 years and holding it for 20 years. So they're saying, hey, we're going to swallow all this up and then not sell any of it for 20 years. That's a part of the plan. And then Michael Saylor's even coming in and proposing a plan to buy up 5 million Bitcoin. So, you know, with these nation states, it seems like it's going to be an arms race to scoop up as much Bitcoin as possible. And if the United States is dumb enough to tell them, hey, this is what we're going to do, then I think all hell breaks loose. So, like, this game theory playing out to me seems like we've got very little time left and it's about to get a little wild here in the next couple of years, maybe even couple of months here. So, you know, I guess this is a long-winded way to ask you, you know, how dramatic do you think this swing is going to be?
I think it's going to be, I think the most level-headed take on this is Checkmatey, our mate Checkmatey, who says it's going to be a bump and grind, bump and grind, bump and grind. And I think that take is the most relevant take. I think it's the clearest, most concise, data-driven take that we've seen. And I agree wholeheartedly to that. Until we have an exogenous event where someone with access to a money printer literally holds their finger on the printer and says, we're buying. And what you're seeing is the nation states will act no differently than Bitcoiners would on a personal level. So what starts out as a very small allocation, this is probably the, you know, the signal from the noise, what I get with, you know, everything that's been told to us so far is the Strategic Bitcoin Reserve wants 1 million Bitcoin, but that's their starting figure of what they want. And you and I know that, you know, where you start and where you finish when it comes to Bitcoin are two very different things. And so that's the signal that they're giving to the market, that they want 1 million. But I can tell you with all of the clients that we work with, it's, it starts at one and, you know, it finishes at 21. That's the kind of thing that happens in this space. So that to me is more indicative of what's happening. And this is where probably the biggest thing that's weighing on the market at the moment is the sort of the political overhang of what's to come next year and what we've got to get through between now and then. And so the two things we need to get through is a quasi-recession with the US resetting the global trade and their personal economy. And then the bigger picture, though, is that in order for Trump to continue his work through to the future, for the latter half of his term, he needs to win the midterms. And in order to win the midterms, if you work back from that, you need to see that he probably needs to have 9 to 12 months of strong economic growth where the policies that he's instituting are actually driving the GDP up, the inflation down, and everything's moving in the right direction. But the Americans need to see at least sort of 9 to 12 months of that. So I look at this and think we're in this sort of no man's land at the moment where we've got tariff, we've got all this bad news around us, markets are melting down, prices down on Bitcoin. I look at this and think this may go on for the next 6 months, but I don't think it lasts beyond the year, like into January. It'll all be resolved by January. And then we kick off basically the ramp up. And this is where I'm thinking we probably have a delayed or a dislocated pump this cycle, where traditionally we were planning to have a pump into October and things were going to be rosy. And if you want to take some off the table, you'd be looking to sell around October through to December. But with the economic landscape at the moment, it's probably going to be an extended cycle where we don't actually start pumping until September. So that means we're going to take us into Q2 or maybe even start of Q3 next year, where we see the pico top in this cycle. And now all of that's dependent on someone with a money printer not saying, hey, I'm going to get really greedy and I'm just going to buy every spare Bitcoin available that's on exchange. And then I look at that and think there's going to come a moment where we look around and we'll probably be talking to each other and thinking, are you seeing what I'm seeing when it comes to this price? Is that what the price is on the screen? Because it's been such a huge gap up and a lot of people are going to get suckered into selling there. And that's going to be the floor that they set, not the top. And so I look at this and I think in numbers terms, because we want the number, my expectation is over the next 18 months, we're going to see somewhere between a 3 to 10x I think a 3x on the low side, which would leave us around 250,000. And to the upside, we might even see, you know, over 800,000 approaching that $1 million figure by sort of halfway through next year.
Peter, I finally got it out of you. But, you know, Checkmate, friend of the program, I had him on the pod as well. By the time this drops, that one will have already dropped. So he gave a nice level-headed take. But I love the bull-tardedness, man. I love to just, like, kind of theorize all of this stuff because, like you said, there's so much bullish news when it comes to Bitcoin, and we just really haven't seen the price action for it. But you mentioned something really unique here, and you know it's timely because we're recording this on April 8th, where you know the Fed had there was rumors it was an emergency meeting, but it was actually a scheduled meeting yesterday about the potential of a rate cut. Now Trump is really pushing for this rate cut because of the tariffs and you know the economy kind of coming down, the stock market getting kind of you know almost waning. So, you know, of course, everybody on Bitcoin Twitter is posting the memes, the money printer. We think it's coming, you know. So do you see that coming potentially pretty soon? And with everything going on, is this a potential where we could be buying, printing money and buying Bitcoin by, you know, late April, early May?
I am not that hopeful. I think there's a job to do here and there is an existential threat to the US that needs solving before we start money printing and filling everyone's bags. And if I look at the top four in the administration, Trump, Musk, J.D. Vance to a lesser degree, but Lutnick and Bessent, who are sort of the money men, I think all of them agree that this is an existential threat to the US. So it will be the number one concern is to get the US back on track before they look at doing anything else or pumping anyone's bag. So if that means the PE ratios of all the stocks need to be halved, then so be it. And the ironic thing about that is that will put the US in very good stead, and it will drive a huge amount of pressure to all of the countries outside of the US. So typically that'll put huge pressure on China. It'll put added pressure on Japan, and that's probably the US's greatest ally. And from a financial sense, it's going to put enormous pressure on the EU. And this is where I think that those four men are going to put the US above all. And sadly, Bitcoin rates a long way down the list of either preserving the US or pumping Bitcoin bags. They're going to put Bitcoin bags way down the list of priorities relative to what they're doing. But for the long-term sustainability and for the long-term health of Bitcoin, I think that's actually a golden opportunity because it allows all of us to be basically stacking sats while the US is getting their house in order. All of a sudden, we've got this price suppression because everyone's fearful about it. Bitcoin's still acting like a risk-on asset, but people don't understand that's the risk-free asset. And so I look at this as a gifted opportunity to us to take advantage of basically buying as much Bitcoin as we can at these prices, because once all of those things have been put in place that the administration wants, then the markets can move. But until then, we're going to be in this sideways chop, which Checkmatey does such a wonderful job of explaining.
Yeah, no, 100%. He does an outstanding job with all of that. But I want to throw a little wrench in there. Isn't pumping the Bitcoin bags also pumping the US bags in a sense? Because now we've got the strategic reserve of over 200,000 coins. Look, I know that's not, you know, a full Nakamoto just yet, but we do have Bitcoin on the balance sheet technically.
You know what? I think that's a good wrench to throw in, because if you look at this, Trump's expressed that maybe they pay off the $35 trillion in debt the time he said it with a little Bitcoin. So maybe my prediction of $1 billion Bitcoin is a little conservative, and Trump's talking $1 trillion Bitcoin. I think so does Pierre Richard with tongue in cheek. But you're right. Bitcoin has the ability to solve a host of problems in the financial sector in the US. Firstly, because the Bitcoin holders are such psychopaths and long-term holders, they're not really fazed by a 10x in the price of the asset. They are, but they're not really, not relative to other assets. The other thing is that's really important is the US can pump this Bitcoin bag as much as they want. And the best part about it is this is the best asset to pump and inflate or capitalize, because this has the lowest downstream consequences for Main Street. It doesn't increase the cost of living. It doesn't increase housing affordability. It doesn't it probably has the lowest impact on inflation figures. It doesn't affect Main Street like the other speculative assets on Wall Street, such as mortgage-backed securities, stocks, and the rest of it. So for me, if I'm sort of looking at this and trying to create, taking a Hippocratic oath to how I'm, running the economy from the US perspective, do no harm would be my number one priority. And by pumping Bitcoin bags over the property market or alternatively the stock market, you have the lowest impact on the US consumer. So for that reason, I think, hey, maybe your wrench is right. Maybe they should be pumping these bags as quick as possible because it's a solution to solving the debt problem. And it has the lowest downstream consequences.
There we go. I threw a little wrench in there for you, Peter. So now, I mean, the SBR, say what you want about it, but I think it's definitely a start. Now, what do you think is going to be a big driver here as far as like Bitcoin adoption? Because we've got a lot of things that have come out here recently. Pierre Richard has been talking about Bitcoin bonds. I believe he's launching something, related to that. I haven't been able to do too much research into that just yet because, traveling and whatnot. But, Bitcoin bonds seems to be something. Obviously, the SBR, the potential of, the U.S. gaining a sovereign wealth fund and, buying Bitcoin through that. But then there's also the ETFs. There's other products that potentially could be out there. What do you think is going to be the big driver here in this cycle?
This is going to be particularly unpalatable for a lot of people to hear, but I think there's going to be regulatory favor will drive an enormous amount of people to Bitcoin, whether it's mainstream or high street, main street, whatever you want to call it. That there are a host of policies that the government can institute to drive that, whether it's favorable terms on borrowing in Bitcoin or on your Bitcoin, or creating effectively personal loans that are to buy Bitcoin, so there's no collateral taken other than the actual purchase of the Bitcoin, and then creating models or accounting measures to support the purchase of that Bitcoin, but have no mark to market on a daily basis. So you just have it marked on the term. So if you have a 5-year personal loan to buy Bitcoin, they hold the collateral. That won't be marked to market on a daily basis. That'll just be taken at the purchase value and it'll be revalued at the end of the loan term. Now, doing something like that could open up, an absolute plethora of new people to Bitcoin who can effectively buy and finance Bitcoin courtesy of Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac or a similar type institution that they create to support Bitcoin purchases. And now all of a sudden, you're getting leverage purchase on Bitcoin supported by the US government, much the way it supports, residential housing. So I look at that and think that to me would be the fastest way to drive the largest amount of capital into Bitcoin and basically make the US more secure than any other country when it comes to Bitcoin dominance.
So are we going to get loan products at under 3% to buy Bitcoin? Is that what you're theorizing here?
I think there could be a very good chance of that. I think you'll get probably sub 5% guaranteed by the government.
Wow, that's incredible. I mean, hey, I've been saying this for a long time because, in 2020, a lot of people were kind of questioning why I bought a rental property at that time. Oh, why didn't you just buy Bitcoin with it? And, obviously you need a place to live, but on the flip side of it as well, it's like, well, I mean, they're lending me, hundreds of thousands of dollars at 2.75 interest rate at that time. So it's like, it's almost a no-brainer. If anybody would do that for me to buy Bitcoin, I mean, also a no-brainer. I mean, you could essentially pay off that loan in maybe a max period of time, 4.5 years, it seems like, if we keep these cycles going. So, and I know like Peter McCormick got into this maybe the last cycle. I think he took out a loan. And look, I'm not saying you should do that and maybe over leverage yourself, but I am saying that if it's a low payment and some of these aspects are, starting to come to light, this seems like it'll be a no-brainer. And then the banks are just throwing you money and everybody's buying Bitcoin. And then we're going to see that thing shoot up to the moon. So,
sounds like the start of the GFC.
Yeah.
It almost everyone seems getting free money to go buy Bitcoin. What could go wrong?
Well, it seems too good to be true. And it seems like it would be essentially, throwing everything up. But I mean, we kind of saw that already in 2020 with the stimmies. So yep. would this just be like a almost like a 10x on what we saw comparatively in 2020?
I think it could be. And this is where, you know, the reason why I like discussing this, and a lot of people are like, oh, that'll never happen. And what the reason why I want to talk about this is because what we lack is imagination as Bitcoiners as to what could be. And this is where we have a receptive administration in the US who's receptive to these ideas of basically economic empowerment or financial liberation of their citizens. And this is just another way to do it. And I look at this and think, well, it takes very little effort on their part to create the facilities and the structure, the regulation around it. We may as well be talking about a wish list that we've got as Bitcoiners that we'd like. I know me personally, if I had the ability to go and, you know, say, have a loan for $10,000 a month, which worked out to being, you know, maybe $2 million worth of Bitcoin in today's dollars or 25 Bitcoin. And I could take out a loan, pay $10,000 a month for the next 5 years, and then we'll square up or we'll refinance the loan. And there was no risk of a margin call. I'd look at that and think, well, that's a loan product I'd want. And I'm happy to save $10,000 a month for the next, 60 months for the next 5 years. If the government were to hold that or the institution holds that, I know not your keys, not your coins, but I'm getting a loan from them. So I look at this and think, well, that's a loan product that I would want to have, because that would ensure that I don't have any margin call on my Bitcoin. As long as I meet my payments, I don't have to worry about it. And then I can let the fullness of time look after the price appreciation of the Bitcoin. And so I look at this and think, we've got a receptive administration. We've got, the crypto czar and David Sacks there. He'll want to create a lasting legacy for himself because he's sacrificed so much to be there. What are the things that he can do to empower citizens of the US to take full control and self-sovereignty of their finances? I look at this and think, here's a layer, and it's going to cost them very little. They're actually going to make money on it. And through time, it's going to probably create more wealth and recapitalize the banking system in the fastest possible way relative to any other asset.
The best place to buy Bitcoin in the United States and Canada is the Bitcoin Well. You could go to the bitcoinwell.com/greencandle and sign up today, and they will give you wishing well tokens. They are one of the only exchanges in the United States that will give you free sats every time you buy Bitcoin. You have a chance to win 1 million sats every time you buy. You get wishing well tokens. You flip the coin down the wishing well, and you have the chance to win 1 million sats. You heard me here, folks. 1 million sats. And on top of that, they have the absolute best over-the-counter service where you can make purchases over $50,000. And they will walk you through the whole thing. They have the best rates in the United States and in Canada. And on top of that, they have the best white glove service where they will take you through those giant purchases just so you feel comfortable. You'll get it in cold storage and it's strictly non-custodial. They are saying, we want you to experience the true power of Bitcoin and that self-custody. So go to the well, sign up, bitcoinwell.com/greencandle today. Enough from me, back to the show. About like I guess almost flipping the retirement market kind of on its head, because there's always the question, how much Bitcoin do you need to retire? And that's always a hot button topic. But we've recently had Fidelity come out and say there's zero fees for you to buy Bitcoin in your 401k. You can get an IRA where you can hold your own keys through companies like Unchained and others. Maybe we get, instead of Social Security, everybody gets a little bit of Bitcoin or something like that. Do you foresee that as a potential too, to kind of revolutionize that? Because, why the hell not at this point? Like it'll be the only thing that appreciates that much over time. And it's truly the only thing that really values your time and keeps your time and energy where, okay, instead of the retirement age going from 60, 65, 70, and just keep climbing up, eventually, maybe we'll crash that retirement age like we're seeing the market crash right now. Like, do you see that as a big driver as well? Or are you a little bit more, tentative when it comes to the retirement market?
No, I think I can talk from experience on this, that I've put my retirement savings into Bitcoin. I'm comfortable with the trade-offs. I'm comfortable with the fact I've got to wait 20 years or little bit less now to touch that Bitcoin. But I look at this and think, from a personal perspective, knowing that Bitcoin is a risk-free asset and having the duration before I'm allowed to touch it, I look at anyone who's, say, 55 years or under, Bitcoin to me is the perfect asset to be putting into your retirement savings, because of the volatility, you can solve the volatility problem, which most people conflate with risk, when if you remove the risk of holding Bitcoin and you self-custody your Bitcoin and you do that safely, you remove the risk of owning it. So now it truly is a risk-free asset. And so now you only have to deal with volatility. And the way, or the solution to deal with volatility, is one of two ways. You either lower your weighting to the asset, so you've got a little bit so you can deal with the ups and downs, or alternatively, you just extend the duration for which you plan on holding that asset. And this is where, to me, the perfect asset in a retirement account is Bitcoin, because you've got time and you've got basically duration is going to solve the volatility issue for you. And then when it comes time to actually drawing down on that pension, you might look at some alternatives that are downstream of Bitcoin, like the income ETFs and things like that that are driven off it. But essentially, to me, Bitcoin looks like the perfect asset for your retirement account.
Yeah. So then you don't have to tell us the exact amount, but say, like, you know, with where you see Bitcoin going, $1 billion potentially, you know, down the line, how much would you say would be a good number for you to essentially, like, store away in that? Say, you know, you're a young chap like myself, and I know you're a young whippersnapper at heart, Peter. So maybe, you know, how much would you say you would need to put in there? Is it, you know, 1 million sats, like 10 million sats? Do you need to get a full Bitcoin? How much Bitcoin do you think you need to retire now, if you have that duration, kind of like you're pointing out there?
I'd put in 100%. And, you know, Bitcoin's a lot like being rich or fit. You can never be too rich. You can never be too fit. So you can never have too much Bitcoin. Look at Michael Saylor. So looking at that and thinking, you know, in all seriousness, we've got circa 20 years or more before we reach retirement. So whatever you've accumulated in today's dollars, you could allocate 100% of that to Bitcoin and then spend the next 20 years saving in your traditional sense S&P 500 index or whatever other investment you want to make. But if you use the actuary tables that, you know, most fund managers use, and you look at what your current balance is, you'll soon figure out that there's no way, using their actuarial tables, for you to have a decent retirement with the expected returns that they're looking to make over the next 20 years and, you know, extrapolating out from the balance that you have. So for that reason, I look at this and I think the decision that you really need to look at and make is, am I prepared to have, say, 5 years of good living on my retirement and then having to go to government benefits? Because that's the reality of where most people are with their retirement account. Or do I want to take a risk and go out the perceived risk curve to take on a much higher allocation to Bitcoin in the hope that I never have to go on government benefits? Because one is an absolute guaranteed. If you use the actuarial tables, most people will end up on government benefits and they'll be living at subsistence level wages for the rest of their life in retirement. That sounds like a shit deal to me. I don't want to do that. So I'm like, you know what? I would much rather go out the risk curve, take a risk with Bitcoin, even though I think it's risk-free. But for those who haven't done the work, they think it's risky. But most people I speak to say, well, I want to go out the risk curve. I want to have a chance of having a fabulous retirement. And if it means, you know, if it's a spectacular fail and all things fail, it means I'm eating cat food earlier than I would be if I didn't do it. So you're ending up in the same place.
Yeah, and I think that that's what people are starting to realize, right? We've kind of gotten in this societal area where more people are taking or, you know, looking at gambling or something where they're saying, like, hey, you know, I'd rather take this risk at this point because the only thing that is guaranteed is that dollar is going to be devalued. But, you know, you mentioned, like, governments and the government spending, and, you know, we've talked about briefly about the tariffs and everything like that. Like, you know, you mentioned that you think we're going to have to get in a recession to get in a reset. How bad do you think that is going to get here, at least in the short term? And do you see us kind of crawling out of it pretty quickly? Or, you know, how do you see just generally on the macro environment right now?
I think it's going to be dependent on what it looks like. I look at it, basically, they're flying the plane into the into the mountain as hard as they can and hoping it bounces is what I'm looking at right now. So, you know, the faster and harder they go in, the expectation is that should be able to bounce faster. And this is, you know, back to Bitcoin being the best asset. It typically leads in and drops the fastest, but recovers. And I think if we try and pull the plane up and we're at this angle and we're gliding, it takes 2 years and then we sort of come out, it's going to be a really slow recovery. And I don't think Trump's that kind of guy. I think he's let's just level the playing field, whatever it is, we kind of need to take our medicine at this point in time. Like, we've been living a lie. All of the financial stats that we've got for the last, I reckon, 5 years at least, have been a fiction. You look at the GDP figure, you look at the unemployment numbers, you look at the inflation numbers, they're all wrong. No one looks at them and thinks, oh, these are the true numbers. And this is where I think there's just a hard reset on, let's just be honest and accountable to where we're at. That way we level set to, you know, a base level that we're all comfortable believing is true. And then you can build back better and faster from there. And I hate that term, build back better. God, anyway, but that's a realistic assumption that, you know, they can actually, once you've got a baseline of, you know, what your reality is, then you can actually start doing something about it. And the faster you get to that reality is the faster you come out and can actually do something about it. So to answer your question, depends how much pain they want to deal with. So, you know, we eat the pain. I'd rather just literally have a total level reset in a week, and then we know where things are and we can start doing our best from there. But it seems like this administration is much more, has a much greater propensity to eat pain and deal with the truth than, say, previous administrations.
Yeah, but it's interesting because Trump is very big on like the zero interest rate environment. And I'm fully of the belief that I think we need a little bit of, you know, tension in the market. We can't just have dollars be free, right, at a 0%. Yeah. So, you know, is there that, you know, I guess like worry that you have where even though they're going to have this pain that they're going to basically just open up the faucet, you know, get that money printer going so quickly that, you know, we'll get back to the asset bubble that we were potentially previously in?
No, I'm not worried about that at all. I'm worried about the money printer not coming on. I think that's the thing I'm worried about. What if they're real in what they're saying? Hey, we want to really sort this out. Because the money printer coming on solves
bad here. Or would that just be bad for like the Bitcoin bags?
It's bad for Bitcoin bags. Okay. It's bad for the stock market. It's bad for the property market. But you know who it's really bad for? Anyone who's not American. Because the euro dollar market is so huge, if they're not printing, then all of these emerging market economies, China, you name it, the whole world, if it's bad in America, it's worse everywhere else. And this is where, you know, one of the consolations of what they're doing, if they do drive America into the ground, it will drive the rest of the world so much further and deeper. And this is where I never discount America, because America is the greatest nation at rebuilding. You've got the best innovators, the best capital markets, the best, you know, property protections. That basically creates something special that enables the US to reinvent itself faster than any other country. So if they level the playing field of the entire world, everyone else ends up worse off and the US recovers faster. That's the reality of it. So I look at this and think, what if they don't turn the money printer on? The rest of the world's going to suffer. The US will be bad. Everywhere else will be worse. And the US will recover quicker. So what's the incentive to actually put the money printer on? There isn't much.
Yeah. So with that, then, is there a scenario where the US, you know, we just have a little blip in the radar, like maybe a little downturn, and then the rest of the world is in a huge depression, maybe the Great Recession or something like that?
I think it could be. Yeah, the tariffs have the ability to really drive an enormous amount of capital out of markets and to the US. I look at, you know, a strategy we've employed for our families for since I can remember is most of our investments are in the US for the fact that they're the deepest, most liquid liquidity or capital pools in the market. They've got the best, you know, property protection rights out of anywhere on earth. It's not a matter of getting a return on capital. We can get a return of our capital. The rest can't be said. You know, you can't repeat that for, say, China or anywhere else in the world. It looks like Europe's going to enact capital controls. And so investing anywhere but the US is, you know, I look at all these policies that are coming, and it's probably going to drive, you know, a huge amount of investment in the US, and you're going to get outsized returns on that if you invest in the US, and everywhere else will suffer.
So basically all the big money in this scenario would go to the US, help propping up the US economy, and then everywhere else would kind of suffer. But with these tariffs, like, is there a potential positive that I'm not seeing here for these? Because it seems like there's a lot of doom and gloom surrounding them, like saying essentially the US market is going to crash because, you know, we don't have the sweatshops that China has where, you know, they're making the Nike shoes in them or anything like that. So everything's going to get way more expensive, at least in the short term. Do you still see, do you see that way? Or do you see the tariffs as a positive to bring some of this manufacturing back to the stateside? Because, you know, quite frankly, it shouldn't be more cheap to, you know, build this or create shoes in China or the Philippines or whatever, literally ship them using gallons and gallons of gasoline to get them over overseas and then have them, you know, dispersed and, you know, shipped all over the country. You know, do you see that as a positive? And if there is some sort of positive to all these, like, shed some light on.
Okay, so you've discovered Bitcoin and are on the path to financial self-sovereignty. But simply holding Bitcoin is not enough. You need to make sure that it's stored properly and you are in 100% control over all your assets. So sharing your keys with third parties and taking on that counterparty risk is not the answer. The answer is pure and simple. It's uncompromising self-custody, and there's no better way to do it than the Bitcoin way. They've got over 25 years of cybersecurity experience, and their team of experts can help you properly self-custody your Bitcoin, secure your digital life, configure your privacy phones, and even establish a Plan B residency if you're looking to do so. So I'm going to help you guys out here and give you a free consultation if you take the first step and visit thebitcoinway.com/greencandle, and you can check out the boys at The Bitcoin Way and see how they can help you become self-sovereign.
I think there's a lot of positives to be had on both sides. And this is where, regardless if you like or dislike Trump, and he's a very polarizing figure, I haven't ever heard someone say they're meh. You know, Trump, meh. Everyone has an opinion, whether they like him or hate him. Highly polarizing. But he has an ability to put himself in a corner where he, you know, he can have a great outcome either way this goes. So if the tariffs work, he generates a huge amount of income for the country. He helps pay down the debt. And if you look at the marginal impact on the consumer, it's only going to be marginal because the suppliers from overseas are going to lower their prices and their margins before they, you know, pass it on. They're going to lower, the distributors are going to lower their prices because the American consumer is effectively tapped out. They're paying whatever they can afford. And so you're going to get a compression in margin from the manufacturer, compression margin from the distributor, and the consumer is going to be relatively unaffected. And if it doesn't go that way and they move all of their capital to America and start building things in the country and manufacturing in the US, then that's a win too. So I look at this and think he set himself up to win either way. And I'd be a bit ambivalent about that. And I think everyone, you know, sort of needs to let this wash out in the fullness of time. You've got a lot of Keynesian economists sitting there saying, oh, it's going to be so painful and this and that. And I'm like, you know what? Why don't you sit down and just watch the show? Because you guys have been wrong about everything for the last 5 years that I've been watching. And now you're piping up about why this is wrong. I'm like, not a good track record. Let's just see what happens.
I agree 100%. It's like all the people that, like, all of a sudden everybody, you know, Trump kind of came out and said this at the beginning, like, we haven't had, like, you know, healthy market, and you know, Bitcoiners have been screaming about it for all this time. And then, you know, I don't know what it was, if it, everybody just thought, you know, when Trump came into office that it would just be up and to the right at all times. But, you know, I think, you know, with this volatility that we're seeing, it's just another sort of cycle. Like, we see 20 to 30% drawdowns literally every single cycle, every single bull cycle. So does it feel like people are reacting to this a little bit differently than in past cycles just because we have, like, the quote unquote first crypto president?
I've thought long and deep about this. I actually think because there are so many new entrants to Bitcoin on a yearly basis, I just think there's a very loud, you know, say 50% of people in Bitcoin right now have been here for less than 2 years. And I look at all of the screaming, the negativity, and oh my goodness, it's crashing, it's never going to recover, and the rest of it. I just look at this and think, there's just a bunch of noobs who just haven't lived through enough cycles to really see how this thing plays out. And it's probably incumbent upon us as, you know, people who have been here a little bit longer to just say, you know, relax, part of one, it's going to be fine. Everything's going to be just fine. Give it some time. And, you know, this is nothing. We've seen a whole lot worse than this. And you know what? If it does go down a little bit further, then so be it. But, you know, this is the opportunity, not the concern. And I look at, and this is where I think we get away from, you know, the real fundamentals of the network, which, you know, I look at on a daily basis, and that's, you know, the exahash or zettahash of the network, how many nodes are running, and whether or not blocks are still happening every 10 minutes. As long as those three things are happening, the price will do what it's going to do, and it's going to, you know, go up through time. So it's just a matter of being patient. You know, if it gets too bad, just close the lid on your computer, walk away for a year or two, and come back, and everything will be fine.
Me here when I've, you know, been in Latin America, because my favorite word is always tranquilo, you know, relax it a little bit, because everybody, it just seems to be all freaking out when it comes to Bitcoin. And actually, I was sitting in my lobby today waiting for my room, and I have Bitcoin stickers on my laptop, probably not the best OPSEC, but you know, somebody came up to me who was like, dude, the markets are crashing, like what the hell is going on? And he's like freaking out. And I'm like, hey, we're going to be all right. Just wait for it. It's somewhat par for the course. But I want to revisit a topic that we were talking about a little bit earlier. When you talked about loans and how, you know, the government could potentially be giving out these loans for, you know, to buy Bitcoin, hundreds of thousands of dollars potentially for, you know, low percentage points. What would that do to the housing market? Because I was just sitting here thinking when you were talking, like, well, if I'm going to get hundreds of thousands of dollars to buy Bitcoin, why the hell would I want to use that to buy a house or something that, you know, I've got to replace the floor, the toilet is breaking over here. Like all these negatives that people talk about owning a home. Why would you ever want to do that if you can just essentially get hundreds of thousands of dollars of Bitcoin? So in this scenario, would this essentially just kill the real estate market in the U.S.?
I don't know if it'd kill the market, but it'd bring it back to a base level that it would be a cost plus rather than have that intangible premium put on owning property. And this is where part of lowering the cost of living and, you know, the housing costs in the US is, at the moment, housing is really a speculative asset and used as a store of value. By creating those loan products on Bitcoin, what you're effectively doing and shifting is you're shifting speculation and saving to Bitcoin rather than the housing market. And by doing that, through time, you're going to lower the cost of housing dramatically. It's going to come back to a market good rather than an intangible, almost like a Veblen good, where the price goes up and, you know, more people want it because it's now deemed a Veblen good. I think there are so many benefits to actually monetizing and supporting financing and loan structures around Bitcoin, because what it does is, and this is sort of something that I've talked a lot about with, say, my father's friends, who talk often about, oh, you know, that Bitcoin, you know, you can't live in a Bitcoin. And I'm thinking, that's very true, but therein, that's the feature, not the bug. Because we can't live in a Bitcoin, we have the ability to then monetize it and speculate on it without it having a downstream consequence or a real world consequence of our cost of living. So I look at this and whips for the governments and Wall Street that, hey, here's an asset over here that we can speculate with that's not going to have the downstream negative consequences on Main Street. This is where piles and piles of capital are going to move in to create finance products around Bitcoin. And then this is where the market cap of Bitcoin gets exorbitantly large, because in order to facilitate all of that capitalization and the financing that's required to build those products and effectively demonetize property and capitalize the Bitcoin market, therein lies the opportunity that we're all missing, I think, at this point in time.
Okay, so then we have Bitcoin essentially taking over the stock market. There's the potential of it flipping or at least lowering the cost of living. Then is there any asset that is safe against Bitcoin? It seems like Bitcoin's going to swallow them all up is what I'm hearing here. Is that correct?
That seems like a logical conclusion.
Yeah, and it seems like then Bitcoin is going to overtake all of these markets. And then essentially, you know, we're going to get to a place where, you know, Bitcoin is just run through everything. Now, with that, do you think that we're going to get to a phase where we're going to see, you know, more of the transaction sides? Because I feel like a lot of what we're talking about here is more of a store of value. Do you see it as that that's going to be the case? Or do you see us move into potentially, you know, the peer-to-peer in our life?
I've got a question for you. Do you want to see Bitcoin go up forever? Like at an exponential rate? Well, it depends. If we have a hyper-Bitcoinized world that has, say, US dollar Tether in it, then Bitcoin will go up exponentially forever. Because you've got something you can infinitely print, which by definition, if you can instantly debase something, Bitcoin will exponentially go up forever. But if we move away from that stablecoin or US dollar that's tethered to Bitcoin, then all of a sudden, we're only going to be growing at the economic growth of the economy. But what's really interesting about this is that all of that growth will need to be contained in the Bitcoin world. So if we've got a, you know, world GDP of 6 or 7%, then the value of your Bitcoin will grow at 6 or 7%. So whereas if you combine Bitcoin with a US dollar, then you can have Bitcoin growing at, you know, 10, 20, 30, 50% per annum. So I think it, you know, depends what you want to see. And through time we're going to get closer and closer to a Bitcoin only denominated world and less dependence on the US dollar. But for the time being, I think we have the exponential returns and the US dollar will further strengthen Bitcoin.
Self-custody can be a daunting task. That's why I've partnered with Bitbox. They have the best hardware wallet. They make it the easiest to put Bitcoin in self-custody. So go to bitbox.swiss/greencandle today and use promo code greencandle and you can get 5% off your entire order. They make it so easy, all in one. You could get the hardware wallet, you could get their punch plates, you could do it all right there on that website to make the self-custody experience the easiest it can be. So visit bitbox.swiss/greencandle, use promo code greencandle, get 5% off your entire order and get your Bitcoin off an exchange into self-custody today. All right, enough from me. Let's get back to the show. Question for you on the US dollar, because do you think that we're going to see that fail in our lifetime? Because, you know, historically, we see fiat currencies, you know, tend to generally fail when the GDP is just about equal to the debt, which is very close to where we're at right now. Yeah. But, you know, we've never had a fiat currency be the global reserve currency. So, you know, do you see us potentially failing with that? Or do you see us, you know, getting to a point where, you know, the strategic Bitcoin reserve and the Doge and everything that they're doing to kind of flip everything on its head actually works? And by golly, where the US is still the dominant country here globally.
Yeah, I think this can go on so much longer than we wish. And, you know, I look at, you know, probably the most important historical market. What can happen with the US dollar is the Japanese yen. They've been living, you know, they're in their fourth decade now of awful economic performance, you know, really weak yen and basically saving, you know, using Japanese savings to finance the rest of the world. It's a juxtaposition that the Japanese, I don't think they would wish to be in, but they've got the lowest interest rates in the world, arguably some of the highest savings numbers, but it's effectively a dead economy. They talk about it being the lost decade, but it's really the lost half century. Or close enough to it. They're in their fourth decade now. It's been over 30 years. It's at least quarter of a century that they've had in a lost decade. But they've got 300% debt to GDP ratios. You're sitting at maybe 120, 130, give or take, whatever that number is, and you're the world reserve currency. So I look at this and think, there are just so many levers we haven't even thought of or don't even know exist for the US to just prolong this way longer than we could possibly think. And I look at, you know, TLDR is if Japan can get it going for 30, 35 years, then the US has got another 35 years in front of it. So who knows? That's getting close to our lifetime.
Yeah, definitely. But I think like the Japanese kind of have like a unique relationship in all of this, right? I mean, we saw back in, I believe in August of last year, we saw Japanese raise interest rates by 25 basis points. And we saw the biggest swing that we've seen since COVID. So, you know, why is Japan so essentially like intertwined into our markets? And is that a huge negative here where if, you know, the Japanese crash, that the United States might feel a ton of pain here soon?
Look, I think that could happen. The reason why that's occurred and why, you know, anything that happens in Japan sort of ripples through the world is it's been the world's piggy bank for carrying out the yen carry trade. And what that typically involves is you go to a Japanese bank, you give them some collateral or you borrow from them at, say, a 1% to 2% interest rate or sub 1% rate. You go and buy assets that are producing over 1% and you get to collect the premium. It's like an arbitrage trade. And when they put that rate up 0.25% and the world nearly blew up, that's because half the world had borrowed from them to carry out this, you know, the yen carry trade where they're getting a 7 or 8% return and they're only paying 1% for it. So all of a sudden that changed the dynamics of that trade dramatically. And you know, everyone, not everyone, but a lot of macro pundits and economists have been talking about the end of the yen carry trade and thinking that, oh, it's the end. And you know what? It's called the widowmaker trade for a reason. It basically never, it's just ruined so many people when they think, oh, this is it. And it just doesn't happen. It just reverts to norm. And you look at what's happened since August last year. We basically had a revert to norm. Admittedly, it's a new normal. So there has been some changes, but everyone's still carrying out the yen carry trade. Now, what's interesting to me is with this yen carry trade, and you know, the financialization or Bitcoinization of finance, is that in the very near future, in less than 5 years, you're going to be able to put your Bitcoin in a bank. But because it's going to be a global asset, you're going to effectively be able to finance your Bitcoin with any bank on earth. So now retail Bitcoiners will be able to access the yen carry trade. And this is what I find amazing, because the yen carry trade has been the domain of institutions and hedge funds for the last 30 years. And now all of a sudden, Bitcoin represents the opportunity to do the yen carry trade if you're, you know, just a humble pleb.
So, all right, let's dive more into that, because then, all right, if you have access to that yen carry trade, then theoretically, with Bitcoin being global, you could have access to essentially every financial tool, which, you know, say you're an American, and there's a lot of leaps and bounds for you to get access to different markets globally and all these different things. Then, you know, are we essentially going to see just the globalization of financial markets? And then taking even a step further, we're going to see, you know, globalization, then 24/7, 365 markets?
By definition and reduction, yes, that's exactly what we're going to see. So we're going to have national banks or national retail banks competing for Bitcoin. And this is where, to me, it's absolutely clear as day. You know, as reliable as the sun coming up tomorrow, bankers are going to want the best collateral in the world, and Bitcoin is that. And so they're going to offer you the cheapest and the best terms on lending if you give them the collateral that they want. And outside of US dollars, gold, the only thing that is truly globally ubiquitous is Bitcoin. And the best part of that is that it's digital. So all of a sudden, this is, you know, a long way off, but we're going to look like our retail banking system across the globe in different countries is going to end up looking like a decentralized exchange. And you'll be able to go to any bank on earth with your Bitcoin, and you'll be able to make your own assessment based on risk and the loan terms that they're offering, whether or not you want to borrow from them. And this is where understanding finance is so critical, in that if you have the lowest cost of capital, you by default have a huge advantage on anyone else using that capital for an investment. And this is where, by holding Bitcoin, and this is where I talk to a lot of the families that we work with who are very heavy in property, is that they want to build an ancillary stockpile of Bitcoin that when Bitcoin is globally ubiquitous and accessible throughout any market or any bank in the world, they'll be able to go to those banks overseas to access the cheapest form of capital for the next property investment. And that's where they're going to get a disparity in, I guess, in terms, and have a competitive advantage for that future investment that they plan on making.
Okay, so this sounds like it's going to be crazy. Now, would that set just like light some gasoline on all this, or pour some gasoline on all these fires that is the financial market? Will that just make the volatility that we're seeing today look like a blip in the radar?
In certain markets, yes, it will. But I look at this and think the beauty of this is, because Bitcoin is a finite resource, you, by definition, have to have an over-collateralized lending system. Whereas at the moment, we have a fiat or a rehypothecated, a fractional reserve banking system where for $1 in, you can lend $20 out. But in Bitcoin, you put one Bitcoin in, you can only lend half a Bitcoin out. And so I look at this and think, as the world starts getting Bitcoinized in the banking sense, this is going to grow the capital base of Bitcoin dramatically or faster than anything else. And so if I look at all the assets in the world, I think there's circa $2,000 trillion at the moment across everything, derivatives, bonds, stocks, property. And Bitcoin has the ability to be bigger than that whole, because that's the foundational collateral asset for the rest of the world to finance. So I look at this and think, we're going to basically grow the pie exponentially, and Bitcoin is going to make up at least half of that pie. And then you're going to have, so that means it's going to be bigger than the stock market, it's going to be bigger than the property market, it's going to be bigger than the bond market, because it's underpinning all of those assets.
Okay, so yeah, with that then, you know, if Bitcoin is underpinning all of these assets and we're moving towards this new, you know, 24/7, 365 trading aspect, and Bitcoin is this finite resource, then how dramatic would it be of, like, you know, say Michael Saylor, who's coming out and saying he's going to take his keys to the grave, like essentially making it more scarce than it even already is. And it, you know, there's the theory out there that, you know, 3 million or so coins already have been, you know, lost. So, you know, I know where we always talk about these things and we assume, oh, 21 million, you know, but it seems like that assumption is like way less and we don't even really know. So the scarcer Bitcoin gets, as far as, you know, there's less buying, less available for buying, it also seems like there's a lot of psychopaths out there that are either going to take their Bitcoin to the grave, that they're going to make this even crazier, or that have just, you know, lost the keys in some way, shape, or form. So does that play a big role into how you see this playing out? Or is that just the, you know, even more gasoline on the fire, and it's just, you know, this is going to happen regardless?
My favorite thing about Bitcoin is meeting Bitcoiners in person. That's why I am so excited to tell you guys about what is going on June 14th down in beautiful Tampa Bay, Florida. That's the Sound Money Soiree paired with Bitcoin Day. They're bringing a full day of great talks with amazing speakers like your boy here. And we're topping it off with a black tie event just for you, and bring in that hot lady friend. We had Bitcoin cross 100K. We're all getting girlfriends, folks. So come on down to beautiful Tampa, Florida. And if you use the link below, you will get 10% off your entire order, whether you want to go to just the Black Tie event or Black Tie event plus Bitcoin Day. You'll get 10% off using the links below. Also, if you're thinking about going to BitBlock Boom in April, if you're going to Vegas in May, or if you're thinking about going to Prague in June, use my promo code GREENCANDLE for all of those. You'll get 10% off your entire order. And come bug me. I hope to see you guys very soon at one of these great in-person events. Enough for me. Back to the show.
I think it'll happen regardless. It's a nice little thing to have. Thanks, Michael Saylor, for your 17,000 Bitcoin contribution personally. I think if he contributed the 500,000 for Strategy, the world would be very upset with him, but hey, he might do that too. But on a serious note, I think it's going to be incidental. This is going to happen, and I see it as clear as day. It's just a matter of time, and it's a matter of when, not if. So this is back to, you know, we get to buy Bitcoin at sub $80,000 now. And we've had the announcement of a strategic Bitcoin reserve. The US wants to buy 1 million. They've got a crypto czar. looking at creating policies to help support Bitcoin and the broader crypto community. The US has said, we basically only like Bitcoin, and that's the only asset we want in the strategic reserve. Everything else we're happy to sell. I look at this and think, there's been no bigger dislocation in Bitcoin's history of where the price is to where the expectation or the good news is. So I think it's just a matter of zooming out, buying as much as you can at these levels, and then sitting and waiting for the next 5 years. I think you'll be very pleasantly surprised.
The point where we're decoupled yet, because we have had that meme being tossed around here for the past few days. So I got to ask you.
I don't think we are. We're nowhere near that. And as long as the US, here's the thing, as long as the US dollar exists, it's always going to be tethered to Bitcoin. So there's no decoupling until the US dollar's gone. So the whole decoupling thing, I think, is a bit of a furphy. It's fun to look at. And this is where, say, we've been giving advice to clients for the last 9 years on Bitcoin, and we always put this into the portfolio as a hedge. And so last Friday, having a look at the decoupling event where everything was down and then Bitcoin was up, I've got to say I was really like so excited to see that, because I was like, oh my goodness, this literally is the event we've been planning for. And then the cold harsh reality of what happens or what happened in the next week, which is what we're sitting with now, where Bitcoin's gone from 88 down to 78 or even 74,000, and it's off 14-15% a week. That's the cold harsh reality of dealing with this asset. But it doesn't, because it's volatile, it doesn't mean it's risky. And this is where, you know, having no leverage on at this point in time, because it is going to get wild. And I'm not sure if you are familiar with that reference point for the Weimar Republic, the Weimar value in gold, where it whipsaws up and down and then goes into hyperinflation. I feel like we're living through that at this point in time with Bitcoin. And we're probably in the 1923 stage, where we're at the start of that cycle. And things are going to get continuing, the volatility is going to increase into a crescendo over the next 5 years. And the key is to make sure that, you know, you've got your Bitcoin and you don't suffer getting whipped out of your position through that. And that's just a simple measure of buying Bitcoin and adding to your stack with no leverage, if you can do that.
Well, is there any potential of, like, you know, you mentioned the loan products to buy Bitcoin. It seems like that would be some sort of leverage, or, you know, I imagine there's going to be some sort of like loans products that are coming out where you could borrow against your Bitcoin. So the guys like Michael Saylor will say they won't sell it and they'll take it to the grave, but, you know, they'll still be able to use the fiat, so to speak, from that. So, I mean, is that another possibility you see here kind of, I guess, coming forward?
I do see a possibility coming forward on that. And this is where we'll have to catch up in a month or two when I can speak more about it. But there's an opportunity, I think, to come up with a product that doesn't have counterparty risk, doesn't have any margin call, and allows you to borrow a very high loan-to-value ratio with a very low interest rate, or relatively low interest rate. And if you give me a month or two, I'll come back and we'll have a chat about that. And that might be a solution to some of the problems I've identified.
All right. Well, you heard it here first, folks. We're booking another interview here in a month. Then we'll have to hear all about this, because you've been talking a little bit about the loan products on to buy Bitcoin. But, you know, what happens when you get that Bitcoin? I feel like a lot of people, you know, run into the issue now. Like they're thinking, all right, I don't want to have that capital gains hit, like all these different things. And there's the theory or the thought, rumor, whatever you want to call it now, that they're potentially getting away with capital gains. But as it stands right now, you know, you still got to sell your Bitcoin in order to use it as money. I mean, you can exchange goods and services for it. You can do things like use, you know, other things, buy gift cards, do whatever. But, you know, they don't make it super easy for you to live on a Bitcoin standard just yet. But I think that's going to change here soon. So hopefully it does. But Peter, you've been so generous with your time coming back on the show, and you're going to come back in a month. So why don't you tell people in the meantime where they can follow along and find out about you and what you got going on?
Sure thing. Probably the best place is on X at PeterBTC Advisor with an ER. Or alternatively, if you want to book time with me, we've got a great team of Bitcoiners whose sole job is to help you self-custody your Bitcoin and get you more Bitcoin. I've got to say one of my proudest achievements, actually two proudest achievements with that business is in the 9 years of giving advice on Bitcoin, we've never lost a Satoshi with our collaborative security protocol. And the statistics on clients who work with us in the first 12 months increased their stack by 51%. So I've got to say I'm hugely proud of those two things. If you want to secure your Bitcoin and you want to get more Bitcoin, reach out to us at thebitcoinadvisor.com and book some time with us. We'd love to see you.
Yeah, 100%. Definitely recommend the boys over at the Bitcoin Advisor. So Peter, thank you for all you do. And thanks so much for coming on the show.
Brandon, thanks so much for having me. Great to catch up as always.
Thank you for tuning into the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here and you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger, where you know I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guests. Or if you're looking for more macro-related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.